I'd like now to welcome Victoria Hughes. Her new book, which is actually a PDF rather than a printed book, is called Five Simple Directions: Master Your Innate Creativity and Get Things Done. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Thank you very much. It's great to be here.
So you've been working all your life as an artist, an educator, and you took it upon yourself to analyze the process of being creative. What is it for those who have creative blocks in their life right now?
This book?
Yeah.
What it is? That's a primary goal, but another goal is to help people better understand what the creative process really is, because as far as I'm concerned, the creative process is, and that's why the subtitle is as it is, the creative process is an innate attribute of the human being, right up there with breathing and digestion. And it's something that we do routinely, that we use in every waking and sleeping moment, and if we understood it better and mastered it, we could apply it with more responsibility and more deliberation and get things done better.
There was a story that you tell early in the book that some people from NASA came up with some kind of test. It wasn't an IQ test, but rather a creativity test. And they gave it to people of all different ages. And 98% of the five-year-olds passed the test with flying colors, and almost none of the adults did.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a linear decline through childhood to adulthood.
Yeah.
What's up with that?
Actually, the test was put together by a Dr. George Land, who is a researcher and psychologist on creativity, among a number of other things. And he developed it for NASA. They just mostly used it for incoming possible NASA scientists to see whether the incoming people had enough innovative flexibility to solve some of the problems NASA was confronting. Land was particularly interested in seeing how the adult scores compared with kids' scores and what happened to this drop-off in creativity over time, because we all tend to think kids are really creative. And then somehow this schism arises in our head where we think, well, kids are creative, but now that I'm an adult, I'm not creative anymore. Land wanted to look more into that. And the study itself is out there. He has an extensive website. You can find him. There are several things that play into that, and the most important, and the reason I mentioned it in the book, is to say, look, this ability to synthesize, to cross-reference, to stay open to a range of different input, to allow our minds to put unusual things together, is a basic ability of the human being, whatever age it is. And because of different acculturation processes over time, we tend to close off those very things that would allow us to stay flexible and more responsive to our environment, even at the same time that we are nonetheless creating everything around us as we move through it. I mean, the fact that you and I are sitting here couldn't have happened 1,000 years ago because somebody invented radio and somebody invented headphones and yada yada, right?
So. And the brilliant Will Sims had the idea to put this table in the corner to use as, as a radio station.
Exactly.
It was my idea.
So none of this happens by accident. All of this develops for some reason from inside of our minds out there into the world.
It doesn't happen by accident. I thought a lot of creativity was the, what would you call it? Thoughtful use of accidents.
Well, that's a longer conversation than 20 minutes, Mary Charlotte. I think one of my side interests is how the mind works, and I am a complete neophyte in this field, but I'm a very avid reader as a neophyte. And to answer a short form of your question would be to say that it's not an accident how these things work together in our subconscious or in the hologram of how our awareness works. What reads like an accident is when our conscious mind, which is usually the last to know, says, oh, this thing just happened. Well, I don't really believe these things just happen like that.
Well, for example, some material falls down on your paper and it makes a cool pattern. That's an accident. But then what you do with it is the creative part.
Yeah. So synchronicity, I'll give you synchronicity. Those things fell on the table and you, at a particular mood, happened to look at them at that point and say, oh, I like them. Somebody else or you at a different time in your life might have just said, I don't even notice them, I'm getting them off the table.
Yeah, that's dirt.
Yeah, exactly. So chance favors the prepared mind, yeah? That's
so
one of those comments.
Let's talk about how do you said some things a moment ago. how do you define creativity, if such a thing is possible? What is creativity?
All these years, I have been making things and selling them since I was in sixth grade. I have been creating without having been stopped partly through the process since I was a kid, like everybody else. And there are still times where I find it difficult to say exactly what creativity is, because to me, it is the massive movement of the entire universe coming into form. So I'm sorry that I sound so metaphysical at that moment, but you know, here we are in Santa Fe. Another way to put it would be to say that creativity is the bringing together of things that hadn't been seen to go together to generate a new form, a new approach, a new experience, something like that. Coming up with different solutions to problems. There are a number of different ways to define it, and I think that's partly why we don't have a clear enough handle on it to use it properly, because we can't even agree what it is. A lot of people think creativity is whatever you do on Sunday afternoon where you go out and paint watercolors, you know, for the afternoon. And some people feel that their whole lives are a creative effort.
Right.
Staunchly religious people would say, well, none of us are creative, but the divine is creative. But it's across the board. So all of those. My personal feeling would be whatever the most useful definition for you is, use that one, because that will help you access that on your own behalf, this ability.
Now, you started selling work when you were in sixth grade?
Mm-hmm.
What were you doing?
I think at that point I was making bracelets. And this has been the story of my life. I make stuff for me because I like to make stuff. I grew up in a family that made stuff. And then people say, ooh, I like that. I want to buy it. And so you know, it's the same thing. It's just that now the pieces are a lot more expensive and take a lot more time.
And you still make jewelry,
among
other things.
I make jewelry and objects and a number of different things. And I teach and I work with people individually and I write and a lot of things. To me, they're all tied by this compulsion I have to understand and articulate what the creative process is. I call it creative action. What creative action is and how we can use it with more awareness. That's underneath everything I do. So I need a process to do that myself, and that's why I make things. Even if I never sold them, I'd make my own work. But then the work with other people is expressing what I learned by having been working myself on my own art.
We're talking to Tori Hughes. So her new manual is called Five Simple Directions. And the first of those directions, so-called, is set your intention. What does that mean?
Intention at this point, a lot of people understand fairly well. It means to be clear on why you are starting to do something. The emphasis I place when I work with people on intention has to do with really understanding the why and not the what. Not just, I want to make $50,000 this year, but why do I want to make $50,000 or $500,000? Why do I want to make this particular art piece? What is the underlying motivation in that that would carry me all the way through the process? Because otherwise, we'll get partway into this, and it's easy to lose momentum or get distracted or be discouraged. If we can anchor our effort on the deeper reason that we're doing this, then we're more likely to carry it through all the way to the end, to go through everything that's necessary to get that intention out there in the world.
For in your experience of watching yourself and watching others, how big a motivator is money versus other things in terms of really stimulating creativity?
Again, I'd have to say that depends on what level you want to answer it. Some people are very motivated by money. But if you look at why they're motivated by money, it's because they're craving other things in their life. They're craving what they think money can bring, right? Because that's mostly what money is. For most people, when it comes right down to it, money is a way we can drive from here to there. It's a thing that gets us to where we want to go. We don't actually want the stack of dollar bills. We want the vacation in Bora Bora, right?
Or to pay the rent.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Any of those, yeah.
In terms of stimulating the kind of creativity that where, you know, something really cool or interesting is made, you know, the stereotype is it comes from some love of art itself, but I don't know. I wonder how much just raw survival factors in?
Well, some of it's certainly raw survival, and it goes back to that idea of what really motivates us. Daniel Pink, as a matter of fact, has a great TED Talk about this, and I can give you information about that later or whatever.
TED, ladies and gentlemen, TED Talks. If you don't know what they are, Google the name TED and talk, and you come up with these unbelievably fascinating 20-minute YouTube lectures by every kind of person on the planet. Mm-hmm. Anyway.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. TED stands for Technology, Entertainment, and Design.
Right.
And they're lectures by people who are at the peak of their game talking about something usually that they haven't talked about in public before. So their exhilaration in being able to communicate is palpable, and they're excellent speakers.
So Daniel Pink.
Daniel Pink. Yes, he talked a lot about intrinsic motivation rather than external motivation, which is a lot of what you're mentioning right now. The difference between, yes, I need to pay the rent, but I need to pay the rent because I want to feel secure in my home and not like I have to sleep under a bridge. You know, that deeper level is going to get us there quicker than just, I need to make this many dollars in my bank account. So the love of art, you'd parse it out the same way. Why do people love beauty? We love beauty because, and these are just some of my reasons, right? It gives us a sense of comfort and understanding, because a lot of beauty is something that our minds relate to in a certain way, can understand or can conceptualize into a feeling that makes us feel good somehow, however that is. You know, we love beauty because maybe for some people beauty is something that's a little uncertain or unexpected, that brings this that exhilaration of something new. The love of beauty is one of those phrases, like creativity itself, where we all assume we know what each other means and we have no clue until we actually sit down with somebody like you're doing with me right now and say, what do you really mean like that?
Yeah.
And I've had this conversation with people who are professionals in my field, and we'll be talking for 10 or 15 minutes and I'll finally realize we're starting to become adversarial in how we're talking about art and creativity, and it's because we have different definitions for creativity. And
right.
we just assumed the other person felt exactly the way we did, and they didn't. So
the second direction is start with what works.
Mm.
So you've set your intention, whatever that might be. Then what does that mean, start with what works?
Start with what works is pulling together, there are a couple parts of this, pulling together what has helped you enter a creative state in the past. Because for a lot of people, especially the people I work with, have already had some experience of a time when they were quite creative, and they're not quite sure how to get back to that. They're not sure how they got there to begin with, and they don't know how to get back to that, and they really want to. So they have their intention, and they're more aware of their internal, deeper motivation for something, and their deep why, their desire. And now they start pulling together both material and non-material resources that were effective in the past, and they expand. The point of this section is to expand your awareness of what your bigger realm of resources is that might be brought for this specific project. So I'm making a piece of jewelry, and say it's a brooch, and there are things that I know I really like to work with. I get them around, and the non-physical things that have helped me get there, the light, the music, the right room temperature, knowing that nobody's going to bother me for a few hours, right? But then say I want to do something different with this brooch than I'd ever had. Say I want to put LEDs in it. Say I want to put a computerized, like a little Arduino in it somewhere.
And a little what?
Arduino, a little microprocessor chip, so that something will happen, something will wiggle, or something will move, or something will jump, or, you know. You've been to the Santa Fe Complex. Let's put a vote in here for everybody should go to the Santa Fe Complex.
Yes.
Yes. So say I want to do an Arduino something in there, but I don't know a lot about Arduinos yet. But I know
I don't know anything about it.
I'll give you that link too. So I need to buy a little Arduino, and then I need, because obviously I don't know a lot, I need to find somebody who will sit down with me and help me put my little Arduino in my brooch so that, you know.
Right.
So some of it is that, like not seeing the novelty of a new project as a barrier, but as a chance to expand and pull new resources in.
And work with other people.
Yeah, exactly. Well, new people are part of what I call other resources.
Yeah.
Resources cover everything.
Right.
Everything. So
then the next step is take sustained action. That just basically means just do it, right?
Yeah. One of the models for the whole creative process is a road trip. And luckily, in this country especially, pretty much everybody's had the experience of a road trip they really liked at some point. Usually,
it's part of our national mythology.
It's true. It's true. So with a road trip, all of this, everything in the five directions can be mapped out. You decide where you're going, because it's, for most people, just getting in the car and driving randomly is not nearly as satisfying for a long trip as having some idea. I mean, at least you head to the Pacific Coast or you head to the Everglades, right? You pick a destination. That's set your intention. You pull together the things you'll need for the trip. You think ahead and you plan and you pull new things together if you need them. Take sustained action is the part where you get in the car and you drive, and you can't avoid getting in the car and driving. So one of the things about the creative process is that there's three basic big areas. There's having the idea, there's doing the work to produce the idea, and then there's setting the whole thing loose to connect to the audience you want. Most people are not fully balanced between all three of those. Some people really like to have the ideas, but they're not interested in actually doing the work. Some people really love to do the work. They don't know, they don't feel that comfortable with the idea. They don't necessarily want to talk to the public to put their work out there in the audience, whatever their work is, right? So
the people who don't want to work with the ideas are the people who tend to repeat themselves. They get one good thing, they love to work it, and they'll work it for 40 years.
I would say, actually, those are the people who like to do that middle part, to just the doing the work. They
right.
don't like to have the new ideas.
Right.
The people who like to have ideas are the ones who always have a new idea but have never actually done very much.
Right. They don't sell anything.
No, not usually. No. And I need to just stress, this is not just about art. One of the biggest, the most long-running conversations I have with the whole world about creative action is that creative action is absolutely everything we do as humans. And art is a tiny part of it.
Yeah.
It's not, we're all inside of creative action. Creative action is not inside of us. We're inside of it. So,
well, when you think about, I mean, when people say, why do we love beauty so much? And I think to myself, if you think about us as all connected to the entire web of life, not just other human beings, but other animals, plants, flowers, etc., and you pick up a pine cone and you look at the incredible beauty and symmetry and kind of fractal of that, or whatever thing you pick up off of the ground, especially biological life, it's extraordinary. And I think, I don't know anything about this, but it seems like we resonate to that because we're deeply biologically connected to the evolutionary process,
yes,
which is always creating new forms anyway.
Yes, exactly. We're part of it. And the idea that we could ever truly be distant enough from it to not relate to it is an illusion. It's just an illusion and nothing more.
Yeah, and perhaps
because
one of the problems of culture.
Yeah. Yeah, but ultimately, you know, when somebody has as much money as they want to do whatever they want usually a lot of land and an ability to access lovely physical experiences out there in the environment, and they want to do things that connect them right back into all of that we're talking about. And it is innate, just as you say.
We're talking to Tori Hughes. Okay, take sustained action. That's driving the car. Now, the fourth of the five simple directions is called finish before judging. What does that mean?
Well, especially because I teach so much. I've been teaching for almost 30 years now, and I see over and over a tendency that is actually programmed into our little brains to get close to the end of a project and then suddenly get really nervous and scared and freak out and back up and say, oh, no, I didn't mean it. Sorry, no. Oh, I suddenly have to do something totally different with my life for the next few years. So in my classes, I would watch this happen over and over again. People almost done with a particular project and then become fearful of completion. And the fear would take the form of becoming very judgmental before they'd actually finished the project. You can't even tell before you finish the project what you have. So they're judging it before they're finishing it. They don't have enough information. And the judgment itself is actually just a predictable response of the way that our minds work at a particular part of a process. And this is everything that I talk about in there is discussed in many ways by many different people in all different fields. I mean, I'm holding myself back from giving you links and writing things down
right,
on
right,
notes
right.
and sliding them across.
You can do that on your website.
Okay. It's a particular response of a part of our brain called the amygdala that senses when risk might be happening. When there's an uncertainty about risk, and moves us away from that. So what a lot of that section of this book, the finish before assessing section, is about are practices to help familiarize people with that response and show them that they don't need to take it so seriously. They can move through it. They can just keep going, and they're never going to get to the other side without moving through this particular step. And incidentally, both that section and the section before cover the whole idea of creative blocks in great detail and how to move through those.
Now, the thing about judging, and there's, you know, Natalie Goldberg has given the world a form of free writing, which said, you know, just keep your pen moving and don't judge. And many, many people have been helped by that. But at a certain point, I mean, it so happens that if you do write or if you do art, 90% of what you produce is actually crap and you got to throw it out. I mean, everybody knows that. It's true. Mm. And you do, at a certain point, have to engage your inner editor, your inner judge. Otherwise, what you put out into the world isn't any good. And I see, because, I mean, you know, watching so many movies and reading so many books, you see the difference between somebody who's okay and somebody who's really gifted, and it's in the editing process.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So some of the editing actually happens if you're practiced at what you do. Some of the editing is actually going on in your own awareness, because after a certain period of time, you can tell up front, well, this has never worked in the past when I built a bridge with no substructure, so it's unlikely it's going to work now, right? So judging is not necessarily a bad thing, but there's no reason or utility in doing it before you're done with the process, because you don't have everything in place.
But the work isn't. But what I'm saying is the work isn't finished.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. The work
until you edit it down to something
right.
That's done. I mean, perhaps talking more about writing and filmmaking than the kind of art that you do. I'm not sure how it works in jewelry.
I think it's all the same. And I make objects, and some of them are wearable. I wouldn't say I was a jeweler in the classic sense of the word. No. Yes, finishing. So what I hear you talking about is leading into the last step, which is the one of launching your work, giving it to the audience that you selected back when you set your intention. When you set an intention, part of what you're doing is saying, who is going to receive this at the other end? And it may just be you, because you want to see what happens and you don't care if anybody else sees it, or it may be the entire world and any range in between there. So part of that last step is giving things forth to the audience and receiving their feedback. And then at that point, then you can start to make assessments, start to tweak, say, well, that one didn't work. I think I'll do something else. Because you are always the first person you're making something for. You're always the first part of your audience. You can stop right at that point, but you have to finish it. You have to physically finish the gesture in order to have whatever it is out there separate from you. It goes to that idea of self and other. You need to make that project. You need to take it all the way out of your own mind and planning and make it an other, so you can observe it in this kind of, you know, dialogue as opposed to a monologue. Then you can assess it. And then if you're going to give it forth further, then you would do that. That would be the point, I would think, where the writer would stop and say, oh, my God, I need to cut 90% of all this out. And then I can get down to the skeleton of what I'm writing about and put that forth.
Tori Hughes is an artist, an educator. Her website is Tori Hughes, T-O-R-Y, ToriHughes.com, where you can find her interactive manual, 5 Simple Directions. Thank you for being with us on the Radio Cafe.
Yeah, thank you.
You've been listening to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. My name is Mary Charlotte. We're streaming live on the web at ksfr.org, podcasting at santafe.radiocafe.org. Thanks to Dotfoil Computer Services. You can subscribe to the show on iTunes. You can find us at facebook.com/radiocafe. And my email address is radiocafe@ksfr.org. Stay tuned for the BBC, then local news, then jazz.